Good morning, everybody. It's another Thursday morning, and I'm here with you for the next hour. This is Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Gary Oppenheimer. He is the founder and executive director of AmpleHarvest.org, which is a wonderful organization that I will tell you about some more in a little while when he comes on the air. But first, I want to just talk to you about some of the wonderful things going on in the area and what's going on in my garden. Of course, you know, the sugar snap peas and the snow peas are getting long, and no fruit yet, but it will be soon. And spring is really here. The April showers are happening right now in May. And, you know, I got some flowers planted, and it's just really starting to buzz out there. It looks great and feels great to be outside again. And I hope all of you are getting some time to be outside. One thing that always starts every spring around this time in May is yoga in the garden. And I know many cities and many places across the country you can find yoga classes that are outside and take in the fresh air and the sunlight. And on Long Island we have yoga at Old Westbury Gardens, which is a beautiful Gold Coast mansion. And they have beautiful grounds, and there's yoga there every Thursday morning and every Saturday morning at 11:15, and it's a wonderful class. And if you are a member of the Old Westbury Gardens, which is a wonderful thing to support, the class is only $5, so I recommend that to everybody. The straw bale gardening workshops that I hosted here back in March, they're still going on now through the weekend, through May 11th. So you can find out more information about straw bale gardening at on their website at strawbalesplus.com. And you can find out a schedule where it is in the local area. This weekend, May 11th and 12th, there's a farm tour and plant sale at Restoration Farm. And that's one of the best hidden secrets in Nassau County. Restoration Farm is at the old Bethpage Village, and it's Nassau County land, but they lease it to a wonderful young couple, Dan and Caroline, who plant and harvest this 5-acre beautiful organic garden. They have a CSA out of it, and they do farm sales every weekend in the parking lot at the old Bethpage Village. Anyway, this weekend you can buy some organic plants for your garden, see what's going on over there, and they also have a bunch of kitty activities going on, so that should be fun. Also, this weekend is the annual Riverkeeper Sweep, which takes place at various locations on the Hudson River, and you can help volunteers clean up 7 tons worth of shoreline trash along the Hudson River, and they really could use your help. So you can find them if you go to the website riverkeeper.org. You should be able to find out about that. Friday, May 17th is Food Revolution Day. And there's lots of different activities going on around the country. Slow Food East End is having a potluck supper and cooking demonstration with live music at the Bridgehampton School Greenhouse in Bridgehampton. And that should be a really great day. And there's also a 2-day vegan expo going on May 17th and 18th called The Seed. That's going to take place on Mercer Street, and it's a 2-day fair that celebrates veganism and promotes cruelty-free alternatives for every aspect of modern-day life. So there'll be lots of things on sale. And you know, talking about veganism, I was at a lecture last night with David Clement. He is the executive director of the Hippocrates Institute in Florida. And that institute promotes mostly raw vegan diet. And listening to him to speak, it was just awe-inspiring at how many people are really curing themselves with a raw vegan diet. And, it's hard for me to really wrap my arms around it because I love food so much. The thought of eating only raw does not really appeal to me. However, I know it is so healthy. And so, in the summertime especially, it's really great to eat a lot of raw salads, and there's so many creative things you can do with salads. So I will highlight them more in my recipes coming up, although this week I have a different recipe for you, which is a cooked recipe. But certainly staying away from animal products is the healthiest diet for most people. And I say most people because everybody has their, you know, it seems like different individuals who have tried it. Some people say it's not good for them, and I don't want to challenge that for anybody. But it seems when you are sick, eating a vegan diet with a lot of raw ingredients and juicing and wheatgrass juice is really the diet for optimal health. And the results they have at the Hippocrates Institute really speaks to that. But one thing that he talked about was, you know, the lead in all of our foods and the different toxic chemicals that are in our foods. And this week in my newsletter, I actually highlighted, you know, a new study that just came out about lipsticks. And, you know, it's the kind of thing, you know, women are putting on lipsticks all the time. Well, if you put on lipstick, you know, most lipsticks had different amounts of chemicals in them and metals in them. And it was just amazing, you know, if somebody puts on lipstick twice a day, they're already getting more than 20% of the daily amount of metals that they are allowed to get in their bodies just through their lipstick. And if you're putting it on 14 times a day, which means some women are constantly putting their lipstick on, they're way exceeding the limits of what they should have in exposure to lead and chromium and aluminum and manganese. So it's really something to look at. The Environmental Working Group puts out these reports on chemicals in our cosmetics, and it's really worth taking a look at so that you can really, you know, be knowledgeable so you can make good choices. Another thing I posted this week in the news was that the European Union banned this pesticide called neonicotinoids pesticides, which have been killing bees or have been linked to the bee decline. And they've banned it for a two-year period while they study the results. And it's absolutely wonderful because in this country where we have been petitioning and filing lawsuits with, you know, the EPA on issues with this, we have not gotten very far. And the chemical companies are so strong in this country. But in Europe, I'm really happy to say that they did ban these bee-killing pesticides, and that's really a wonderful thing, and maybe we can see some bees coming back, and that will be enough proof to get our country to take another look. There's also another study that came out that's linking Monsanto's Roundup to autism, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's, and this is nothing new to those of us that are passionate about these issues. But, you know, every time another study comes out linking it, we have more hope that there will be more bans because the power behind these biotech companies is just scary, really scary. Also, I want to urge all of you to contact your senators and tell them to not support the new bill that is being proposed by Senator Hagan and Crapo, that's really his name. There's a new bill called the Sensible Environmental Protection Act, which basically is not sensible at all. What it is doing, it is reversing the Clean Water Act, and it's trying to undo the protection that the Clean Water Act has in requiring government officials to let people know when spraying has been going on and when the waters are contaminated. And this Sensible Environmental Protection Act will undo everything that the Clean Water Act does. So tell your senators to oppose this dangerous bill. It's really, really bad. And also urge your congressmen to support and protect the SNAP program. That used to be the food stamp program. It's now called SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program. And we need to support that in the Farm Bill. And also, there's a lot of other important initiatives in the Farm Bill that we need to support for education for young farmers and subsidies for young farmers and small farmers so that they can keep doing what they do so beautifully and make it easier for young people to go into farming, because right now the majority of our farmers are over the age of 65, and if we don't have farms, we do not have food, and that is just so, so real. So we need to really support that. So now I want to share with you my recipe so that I can have Gary Oppenheimer, my guest, come on and talk to us about Ample Harvest. So the recipe I have this week is Mediterranean vegetables with tempeh. And this is a really versatile dish. You can substitute any vegetables that are in season and use those. So for this recipe, it serves about 8. You're going to have 3 blocks of tempeh. You can use, if you need to be gluten-free, you can use just plain soy tempeh. Otherwise, you can use a 3-grain tempeh. And you're going to cut the tempeh into cubes. And the way that I cut it into cubes is I first slice it in half horizontally so that I'm making the tempeh block thinner, and then I slice it into cubes. And that way, when it's cooking up, all of it can get crunchy, and it's more delicious that way. 1 onion chopped, 3 carrots chopped, 1 broccoli cut into flowerets, 1 cauliflower also cut into bite-sized pieces, 2 peppers, whichever colors you like. You can cut them into strips or into chunks. 2 tablespoons of chopped garlic, 2 tablespoons of chopped dill for the tempeh. Also, you're going to need 1/4 cup of dill for the stir-fry. 1 large can of fire-roasted tomatoes. That's organic fire-roasted tomatoes. 1/4 cup chopped parsley and 1 tablespoon parsley. 1 bunch asparagus. 1/4 cup Kalamata olives. That's pitted Kalamata olives cut in half. 2 tablespoons capers. 1/4 cup white wine. 1 can artichoke hearts cut into quarters. And salt and pepper to taste. So you're first going to cut the tempeh, like I just said, down the middle and then into quarters and then into cubes. And you're going to bake the tempeh on a well-oiled roasting pan at 425 degrees until golden brown on all sides. So what I do is I spread some olive oil on the baking sheet, put the tempeh on top, and then I kind of toss the tempeh on the baking sheet so that it gets coated in the olive oil on all sides, and then I roast it in a very hot oven. So it's almost like pan sautéing it, but you don't have to sit there and watch it and turn it all the time. So it's really saves time, and while that's in the oven doing its thing, you can focus on the vegetables. So while the tempeh is in the oven, in a medium saucepan, you're going to sauté 1/2 of the onions in a little olive oil with 1 tablespoon chopped garlic. Add the tempeh when it comes out of the oven to this dish, along with 1 can of the fire-roasted tomatoes, 1 tablespoon chopped parsley, and 2 tablespoons of chopped dill. Then you're going to add 1/4 cup of white wine to that pot and just let that simmer. And so the tempeh, you know, the tempeh is going to be being made separately, and then we're going to add it to the dish afterwards. Okay, so you're going to cover the bottom of a wok with olive oil, and when the oil is hot, you're going to add the remaining onions and the carrots to the wok. And you're going to start stirring that with a tablespoon of garlic, and you're going to saute that for a few minutes. Then add the broccoli and the cauliflower. They are the second longest to cook. You're going to stir that around for about another 5 minutes or so. If you need to add some more oil, you can do so, or you can add some water if you want to keep it with less oil, just to help steam the vegetables. Then you're going to add the peppers and the cherry tomatoes, and you're going to cook for a few more minutes. Then add the remaining 2 tablespoons of white wine and the asparagus. Stir that up. Then add the 2 tablespoons of dill, the 1/4 cup of parsley, and the artichokes. Lastly, you're going to add the capers and the olives, and you're going to season that with salt and pepper to taste. Gently stir the tempeh mixture in. After the wok dish is finished, you're going to mix the tempeh in. If you want to serve it separately, you certainly can. Or another nice presentation is to, on a platter, put all the vegetables and then put the tempeh and the tomatoes in the middle with the vegetables around it, and that looks really pretty as well. And you can serve it with some quinoa pilaf or some black forbidden rice. That would look very nice with it as well. So it's a delicious dish. Of course, as all my recipes, they will be posted on the PRN website starting tomorrow. And you can also find them on my website. So enjoy that recipe, and like I said, feel free to change it up. I made it last week, and I actually put some fiddlehead ferns in it because I saw them in Whole Foods, and they were great. So you can add those as well. So now it's my pleasure to introduce on Gary Oppenheimer. Gary founded the organization Ample Harvest. And in 2009, he was a master gardener, and he had this idea to reduce food waste and help feed the hungry in his community by connecting those with extra produce to food pantries. And in just 7 weeks, Ample Harvest came to fruition. 3 years later, AmpleHarvest.org has registered nearly 5,000 food pantries nationwide, and Gary is working closely with the USDA and Michelle Obama's Let's Move campaign to bring fresh, locally grown food to families all over the country, as well as speaking at events such as TEDx Manhattan to share the organization's mission. Along with vocal coach Deborah Zook Smith, he has also recently started AmpleMusic.org, which is an initiative that brings together young musicians with a desire to engage their peers in the discussion about food insecurity. Gary Oppenheimer is a CNN hero and winner of many awards, the Huffington Post's Greatest Person of the Day and the 2011 Game Changer, and the Russell Perry Foundation's Making a Difference Award. After living on a boat in New York Harbor for many years, Gary now makes his home in the mountains of northern New Jersey and is a master gardener growing a lot of his own fruit vegetables. So, Gary, are you with us?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for the wonderful work you're doing.
Thank you very much. And by the way, one small correction, although it's not all that small, but actually we're closing in on 6,000, not 5,000 pantries.
All right, 6,000.
So we're pushing very hard to get as many pantries in America as possible accessible to the millions of growers across the country of extra food in their garden.
Uh-huh. So why don't you tell us, just go back, let's hear a little bit of the history of the founding of Ample Harvest. What was your inspiration and how did it start?
Well, the inspiration is a fundamental thing in me. I hate waste. And so as a kid, I grew up with, finish what's on your plate, kids are starving in Europe. And so I've always had this thing of, you don't waste your food, you don't waste time, energy, emotion, etc. I grow food here in my own garden. I've got a large, beautiful property here in northern New Jersey. And in 2007 and 8, I had too much food in my own garden. I didn't want it wasted. I took it to a local battered women's shelter that I happened to know existed here in my town. And one thing that the people who took the food said, which caught my ear, was, thank you so much, now we can have some fresh food. Which was a rather odd thing for somebody to say, but I walked away thinking, is it they only get canned food? A year later, I was asked to take over the directorship of an already existing community garden here in the township. And one of the things that the people already in the garden were complaining to me about was that as in past years, as the season had gone on, people were being overwhelmed with the food in their plots. They were going on vacation. They were bored. Food was being left to rot in the garden, and it seemed like a big waste. And at this meeting, I simply said, you know, if we're going to have an ample harvest, at least we can get it to people in the community who really need it. I had no idea that was going to be a tipping point for something that has become as big as it has, but they loved the idea, and we set about to put up a program in the township here to actually get the extra food from the community garden to the food pantries in the township, except I was unable to find any food pantries in the township on Google. Google said the nearest one was 25 miles away in another town, and I realized that if I was having this problem, so was millions of gardeners across the country, and I had this idea of what if I built a Google-type device, actually, on the Internet to allow these millions of people to learn that they could donate food and be able to donate the food, and out of that came AmpleHarvest.org. The idea came to me in March of 2009, and as you said, 7 weeks later, it was ready for national rollout on May 18th, 2009. And it just took off like crazy.
How did you go about finding all the food pantries? Because like you said, it is hard. If you're not in that world, it's very hard to find the food pantries. How did you find them all?
There are two answers to that. One is I'm really good at guerrilla marketing. There's all sorts of ways of doing things to get the word out, to get the buzz out. But the other thing is there is a network in America of food banks. And I want to just briefly explain the vocabulary because this is really important. A food bank is a large, and there are 200 of them, give or take, in America, are large warehouses distributed across America. And this is a place that, think of it like a factory, a big warehouse, tractor trailer loads of food coming in. And this is the central collection point for government and corporate donations of food. From the food banks, they in turn distribute the food to 33,500 food pantries across America. Now, in some parts of America, what I'm calling a pantry may also be called a food cupboard, a food shelf, and a food closet. And even in the Northwest, it could also be called a food bank. So the vocabulary, depending upon where your listeners are, may vary a bit. But basically, we'll use the word food pantry. The food pantry is a place that's in the in your community. It's in the basement of House of Worship. It's in a YMCA. It's in a government office. And that's where families who are struggling to feed themselves go to get assistance. What we started doing initially right off the bat is I went to all of the 203 food banks and said, I got this great idea. I want to help your food pantries get locally grown fresh food. Would you please send this information out? And a whole bunch of them said, oh, this sounds like a great idea, and they started doing it. And pantries started signing up. As a matter of fact, on the 150th day after I rolled out AmpleHarvest.org, which just coincidentally was World Food Day, the 1,000th food pantry had already signed up. So we're talking sometime in, I think, October 15 of 2009, we already had 1,000 food pantries. The pantries were desperate for fresh food, and the reason is because the food bank system, as efficient as it is at getting processed food into the communities, really can't handle fresh food. The system isn't designed because
they don't have refrigeration. They don't have refrigerated trucks.
The delivery cycle. Food pantries may only get shipments of food once a month from a food bank, and you certainly can't have fresh food with a one-month shipping cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But food, you know, the food in your own garden, you're talking about, I think you said the snow peas, are you waiting to blossom?
Mm-hmm.
When you have too many of those, you can go to AmpleHarvest.org and find a food pantry in your own neighborhood, find out that they are open on, for example, Tuesday evenings, harvest the snow peas you don't need, and take them right to the food pantry that afternoon. The clients come in that evening to get their food, and, oh, my God, there's snow peas here. This is wonderful. They get some of the snow peas to take home. They're actually getting food fresher than you and I can buy in the supermarket. So by bypassing the choke point in the food bank network, it opened up a whole new supply-side channel of locally grown, freshly harvested, healthy food into the food pantry system that one out of every six Americans rely on. And the important thing, by the way, is that's, you know,
is that
one out
true?
Of six.
One out of every six?
Yeah.
Wow.
As a matter of fact, let me make it even scarier. Today, one out of four children under the age of six is growing up in a food insecure home, except if they're Hispanic, then it's one out of every three children. And food insecure, again, vocabulary, means that either you don't have enough food in your house, or you are at serious risk of not having enough food. So These are the people, and by the way, this is not necessarily the people on the other side of the railroad tracks. This could easily be you or your next-door neighbor, a family that got where the breadwinner got laid off, and suddenly they don't have enough money to pay the rent and to feed the family. They're stuck until they get a job. They go to a food pantry for help. So it's entirely possible that your listeners, your listeners' friends, your listeners' neighbors, one out of six people you know probably is using a food pantry or has at some point been using a food pantry. It's a frighteningly large number, but it is the fact on the ground in America today.
Yeah. You know, I worked with a collaboration of synagogues in my area, and we had a little program that we started called From Our Table to Yours, which was taking over leftover food, like City Harvest or local or Island Harvest, but leftover food from parties that were too small for them to come and pick up, but we could take them to, you know, an unwed mother's shelter or a battered woman's shelter. We found different places where we could bring them in our local communities so that we weren't wasting food. And then from that, we also started From Our Garden to Yours, and where we were doing the same thing because I didn't know of Ample Harvest. So, but as a gardener, I also, you know, comes the end of the summer, everyone has too many zucchinis. Everyone has too many cucumbers, too many tomatoes. And you're, what, and you're like trying to give them away, but everyone I know grows also, so everyone had. So we started From Our from Our Garden to Yours, and it was, you know, similar to what you're doing, except it was just very local for...
There are lots of little small programs that people, good-hearted people with too much food around the country that have been doing this for a while, but on a national scale, there was no national effort, there was no national message.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what AmpleHarvest.org brought to the equation. Actually, the message and the AmpleHarvest.org model has now gone global. But the thing that the thing that we're really doing is basically telling people that you can donate food and encouraging them to donate it and then enabling it, but on a very, very large scale. People who have organizations like yours or others like Planter or whatever else, that they certainly should keep on doing their great work.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really trying to, our core mantra is no food left behind. Basically,
right.
Food should be eaten by somebody. And if you happen to grow food in your garden and you eat it all, that's great. And if you grow more than you can use and you want to give it to your neighbors or your friends and preserve it, that's great too. But the stuff that you can't use, preserve, or give to friends should be going to the needy in the community.
Right.
And the result is a healthier community, frankly, lower taxes in the long run, a healthier country down the road, and you feel good because you've reached into your backyard instead of your back pocket to help your neighbors in need.
Right, right. And I've even talked to some food pantries where you give them a lot of, you know, corn at one point, and they'll process it in a way so that they can, you know, put it into bags and freeze it and have, you know, fresh corn that they can pull out in the middle of the winter when it can be a real treat. And that's another way of, you know, stretching the harvest a little bit.
Yeah. Some can do that. In some cases, the food that gets delivered goes out the same night.
Right.
And whatever works in the community is what should be actually being done. Obviously, when those zucchinis are coming by the gazillions or the tomatoes, then there may be some preservation that takes place.
Mm-hmm. So you describe yourself as an aging geek. Why geek? Why is that? Do you have any geek superpowers that you've used with Ample Harvest?
Well, that's an interesting question. I was one of the early people in personal computers. I actually soldered a computer together in, I think it was 1975 or 6. I have it here next to me. I'm afraid to turn it on. But I go back to that period of time, and then I designed a prototype email program also in the 70s. And I was involved with MCI's rollout of this is all before the internet, of course, MCI mail email service. So I've always been big in realizing the opportunity and the use of technology and sort of being on the leading edge of using technology. You know, not that the technology is the end in itself, but it's the means, to the end. In this particular case, the internet, which is really what AmpleHarvest.org is built on, is the ideal medium for connecting the dots, because really the problem in our community, which is hunger, and the solution in our community, which is at excess food, are both in the community. It's just
right.
that the people with the food didn't know they could donate, and the people needing the food didn't know the food was there, and we are using the technology to bridge the two together. So AmpleHarvest.org is something that, yes, I do describe myself as an aging geek, but it's something that is built on the technology that's ubiquitous. Pretty much everybody has access to the internet in one way or the other, whether it's in their home or their school or their library or their phones.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually can go a long way to solving hunger, malnutrition, and actually a lot of other problems in our society.
Yeah, if it's used in the right way, that's so true. Now, you said there's 33,500 food pantries. However, only 6,000 are plugged in with Ample Harvest right now. What is going to take to get all 33,000 up on board?
Work. And remember, we're just about 4 years old now, so those 6,000 pantries represent 4 years of work, largely by me and more recently by a smaller team of people. What it's going to be needing is really two things: support from people across America for helping what we do, as well as the work that we are doing to get those pantries up. So pantries sign up. They receive information. Hopefully they agree to sign up. It's totally free for the pantries, of course. They've been recently signing up at the rate of maybe a dozen a day, which doesn't sound like a lot. But spread across the country, the dots start to get filled in and filled in. It's an ongoing process. This is a viral spread of information. You have to remember, first, that the typical food pantry is run by your grandparents. They're run by older, often, volunteers in a house of worship who are not tech-savvy. So it's not like you can blast something out over the Internet and they all, oh, we get it, and they sign up. There's also some reticence. I'm afraid that I don't have refrigeration. I'm afraid that I don't have storage. And although the AmpleHarvest.org model eliminated the need for storage and refrigeration, and frankly, they also are afraid it's going to cost us money, and we have to keep reiterating AmpleHarvest.org is totally free. So this is something that just takes time. We do have support from the faith community. The National Council of Churches has been an amazing partner, as have other faith communities. The government helps get the word out, the 2-1-1 network, which is part of United Way, media. There are many different ways that pantries find out about it, and then they sign up. I'm not seeing that we're ultimately going to get all 32,500 pantries up, 33,500. Even if we get only 15,000 or 20,000, that's going to be a fairly good saturation across the country of places for growers to go to. Mm-hmm. More is always better, however. But it's an ongoing process, and with the help of people in the community, in communities across the country, we're getting there.
Mm-hmm. So if people are listening in all different parts of the country, and they know some local pantries, they can actually go to their local pantry and tell them about Ample Harvest. How would they go about signing up?
Well, the first thing, and this is really important, the people in the community should not just go on AmpleHarvest.org and sign up the pantry. It's an opt-in. The pantry itself needs to do the sign-up. We don't want people
right.
being good guys and signing up pantries. But if you go to AmpleHarvest.org/local, it walks you through a series of steps that you can do in any community of the country to sort of help cement AmpleHarvest.org in the community. And what's included on that page there is a flyer that you can print out and go to the food pantry. Now, the first place to look for a food pantry, frankly, if you are in a faith community, is go to your house of worship. 70% of the pantries in America are in a house of worship, so if you go to a church or a synagogue or a mosque, there's a fairly good chance there's a food pantry there. You can talk to the food pantry manager. Otherwise, you can go to the local community people. You can go to your town officials and ask where food pantries are. And just take the flyer to them and say, this is a really good idea. It's endorsed by the food banks. It's endorsed by the media. It's endorsed by the government. It's free. You should sign up because it will enable growers in the community to actually find you when they want to donate food.
Yeah, it's great. It's such a great, important idea. You know, how many growers do you estimate are in our country that are able to donate?
The National Gardening Association, which is a partner of AmpleHarvest.org, estimates that there are around 40 million people in the country who grow food in home gardens. That's a fairly good number. Now, although people have estimated the average harvest is 300 pounds, to me, you know, for some people that's like, oh my God, I only grow some parsley. I'm not growing that much. For others, that's a low number. But whatever the poundage is, it's almost irrelevant. 40 million people grow food, and it might be herbs in your kitchen window. It might be a small backyard garden. It could be a plot in a community garden. Those are the people who can be donating the food. And then once they've done that, by the way, each of those people, as they learn about the opportunity to donate food to a food pantry themselves, become the vector in their own community. When their next-door neighbor leans over the fence and starts complaining about too many zucchini, that person then tells them, you know, the pantry at St. Mary's Church down the street takes your food. So actually, it's not just what we're doing, but it's the viral spread of the information that takes place in the communities too that's been a big help.
Mm-hmm.
So with 40 million growers growing, and this is not including farmers or other larger, you know, institutions, the opportunity to change the face of hunger and nutrition in this country is absolutely immense. And an important thing for people to know is the scope of the impact of malnutrition on our country. I was recently, in March actually, at a meeting at the White House, and had learned numbers that were just staggering to me. Kids growing up today have a 1 in 3 chance of growing up at some point becoming diabetic, and we're quickly drifting towards 1 out of 2 chance of becoming diabetic.
I know.
Uh-huh. And that can, in good part, be impacted by moving people, to making at least available to these people, to these families, healthy food instead of canned produce. You know, canned produce is packaged either in heavy syrup, which is laden with sugar, or salt, which is also not great for you in large amounts. And so if your produce is basically going to be canned peaches and canned cherries and canned what have you, you've got this extra sugar in your system. You're going to end up diabetic, and that has a huge impact on our long-term health care costs.
Absolutely.
At least making the fresh food available can help change the health of the future of the country. The funny thing is, when I rolled out AmpleHarvest.org in 2009, for those of you who may remember, was in the that was the summer there was the heated debate in Washington on what is now called Obamacare on the health care
mm-hmm.
program. And one of the early articles about AmpleHarvest.org actually appeared in the Huffington Post by an author named Sasha Abramson, and he wrote, and this hadn't crossed my mind until he wrote it, that the impact of AmpleHarvest.org will be on the long-term health care costs in the country. And when I realized what he was saying, he was absolutely right. I was just thinking we were feeding people, in effect, but in reality, it goes way beyond that. The health and the environmental impact of AmpleHarvest.org is not insignificant, and it is long-term.
It is long-term. Gary, we need to take a break just for a few minutes, so I don't want anyone to go away, because when we come back, I want to talk more about other ways that we can get Ample Harvest into the communities and also, of course, some of the challenges you face. So don't go away. We'll be right back. We've been talking with Gary Oppenheimer from Ample Harvest, and this is Bhavani from IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. Be right back. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And my guest today is Gary Oppenheimer, the founder of Ample Harvest, a wonderful nonprofit organization that is connecting those people with extra produce to local food pantries. Gary, you back?
I am here. And by the way, while we've been speaking, a food pantry in Santan Valley, Arizona, registered on AmpleHarvest.org.
Great.
Just wanted to let you know.
That's wonderful. Any chance by listening to the radio show or just coincidence?
I have no way of knowing, but I'm presuming you have listeners across the country.
I do. So, you know, one thing I was wondering, and I don't know whether you've thought about this, but another program that some friends of mine have started here on Long Island through the Long Island Community Agricultural Network is a push called Grow to Give. And they're going into these places of worship that have the food pantries and helping them set up community gardens there. Because one of the beauties of these places of worship is they have built-in volunteers, you know, people that are willing and that want to help. Have you thought about taking the next step with Ample Harvest, possibly, or are you going to stay focused and let someone else do the gardening part?
Programs like that are wonderful, and I applaud them, but I'm a firm believer that a well-run nonprofit keeps to its mission.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we're in that particular thing. We have a very clear mission, a very clearly defined mission, and we stick to it. We do partner with organizations all over the place that are doing other things that are going in the same direction. So a group like that that's actually getting houses of worship to set up gardens is wonderful and should be applauded, but that's not what we do.
Right.
Our very narrow mission, and we're going to stick on it, is to connect the growers from across the country to the food pantries across the country and partner with people who are doing other wonderful work. By the way, you had mentioned something earlier about SNAP benefits, and I should make one point that in tandem with what you just brought up, many people don't know that if you are receiving SNAP benefits, you can use those benefits to buy seeds or seedlings to grow your own food. So it's not just using SNAP to buy food to the store. You can actually buy seeds and seedlings at a garden shop, grow your tomatoes, grow your zucchini or what have you, and actually help to feed your family that way.
Wow, I did not know that either. I know that you can use your SNAP coupons to buy food at farmers markets, which is new, and there's lots of, you know, programs like Double Up Your Bucks and, you know, incentives to try to encourage people receiving SNAP to use their money at farmers markets, but I did not know that they could buy plants. That is great.
We have actually a friend of AmpleHarvest.org going way back named Daniel Bowman actually was found the piece of information deep inside some legislation and actually brought it to the USDA's attention. And so he set up a site called SNAP Gardens, which actually is helping to promote that idea. So, yes, people, if you're receiving SNAP benefits, consider using it. If you have the sunlight and the soil and a little bit of a green thumb, grow some of your own food. It's both healthy, it's rewarding, and frankly, it's economically beneficial for yourself. And by the way, if you end up growing more food than you can use, you can give that excess food to the food pantry.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is actually an empowerment thing, by the way. This is something that is important. We are actually empowering people in the community to actually help to change the future of their own community.
Yeah, well, it's clear that one of the main goals of Amble Harvest, obviously, was to eliminate hunger in the U.S., but it seems like one of the benefits or byproducts of this is that it's also, you know, allowing less waste to go into the landfills. Was that part of your mission when you were planning this?
I'm going to have to give you two answers to that. I am a Rutgers environmental steward in addition to being a master gardener, so it wasn't part of the design of AmpleHarvest.org, but it was in the background of my mind. When you ship food from across the country and in cans or boxes, you not only add to the carbon footprint of the food coming in, but you'd have to deal then with the waste disposal of it. So there's an environmental impact of shipping food. There's another piece also. There are plenty of people who grow food in home gardens more than they can use, and they, for whatever reason, they don't compost the extra food they throw away. But when you throw that food away, what happens is you're not only increasing the waste stream, but that food actually breaks down into methane, which is a climate changing gas 20 times worse than CO2. So by stopping people from throwing food into the trash, we're not only reducing the waste stream and reducing methane emissions at the trash dumps, but we're reducing the flow of processed food into the pantries, which has its own environmental benefit there. So this is, as far as I know, the only hunger nutrition program anyplace that actually has a major environmental benefit that comes along with the impact of also helping the community. We described it as helping both the people and the planet.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're making use of what we already have instead of throwing it away, and that is, no food left behind really goes to the idea of use what you got.
Right. What have been some of the biggest challenges that you've faced in your Ample Harvest campaign?
It's an interesting question. By far the biggest challenge has been getting the funding support that we need. And it's not because people say it's a bad idea. To the contrary, they love it. What I've discovered in the nonprofit world is very often, particularly with foundations, they will fund things that they know and they are familiar with, which is perfectly fine. But if you have an innovative idea, a new and exciting idea in the nonprofit world that foundations really haven't dealt with before, they're often very hard-pressed or reticent to support it, not because it's a bad idea, but because it's not what they were set up to actually fund. It's not uncommon to hear something that basically goes like, we love what you're doing, but we've never seen anything quite like it, so we can't help you. Keep it up.
How frustrating is that?
it is very frustrating. You know, you get slaps on the back from the food bank world, from the growers, from government officials, from the media, and yet we are having an incredibly difficult time. And the other important point is it doesn't take a lot to run AmpleHarvest.org. The biggest, the primary food organization in the country that sort of coordinates all of the food bank, if you will, food banks, is called Feeding America, a wonderful organization. We consider them a partner. Our annual operating costs are 5 minutes of their annual operating costs. I mean, just to soak that up for a minute. That's how efficient AmpleHarvest.org is. And the key reason is because we don't have to buy and ship food. The food already exists in the community, and the growers take it right to the pantry, so the shipment already exists. So AmpleHarvest.org is extraordinarily efficient and is in a position to make a huge change in the future landscape of food in the country. Right now, the ongoing challenge has been getting the funding to get the minimal staffing that we need. I was once asked, why do you need money? You're on the Internet. And it never crossed my mind somebody would ask that question, but it's an important question. And the reality is you can say the same thing about iTunes, eBay, or Google. They're all on the Internet, but they only work because they have really good people and technology that make them work as well as they work. AmpleHarvest.org is never going to be the size of eBay or Google. There's no need for that. It's always going to be a small organization. But it does take technology, and it does take people, and that takes money. But it's only several hundred thousand dollars a year to actually operate an organization like this. We're not talking millions or tens of millions of dollars for a national program. That by far has been our biggest challenge. Other than that, it has been just continuing to come up with new and creative ways to further get the word out to people across the country that the solution to hunger is in their backyard.
Mm-hmm. Would an organization, are you familiar with Slow Money? Do you know that organization Woody Tash started?
No, actually, that's a new name to me.
Slow Money, it's, you know, modeled after a little bit the concept of slow food, but it's trying to get entrepreneurs and people who want to invest money into food type businesses, you know, to try to support local agriculture and keep money within their community. And yet, so Ample Harvest might be a little bit of a stretch because it's not necessarily just their local community. But these
are
people that are looking to, these are people that are looking to invest in a way that their money is going to bring change and turn things around. So you might look at Slow Money.
We'd love to, and we'll do that. The important thing, by the way, is we're not a business. We're a charity. And the distinction is that in a business, you expect to get a return on your investment. And in a charity, you expect society to get the return on your investment. So
Right. We
will certainly, and if anybody from Slow Money is listening, please get in touch. But we'll certainly follow up with you also.
Yeah. I think, you know, there might be some partnership that could happen there. So what are you growing in your garden? I'm sure you've already planted some.
Oh, my. It is a fairly large list, and I have the list in front of me. This is not a complete list, but what I'm growing is basil, bees and peas, broccoli, carrots, cauliflower, chives, corn, cucumber, dill, which I've discovered naturalizes, lettuce, melon, onions, parsley, peas, peppers, spinach, squash, sunflower, Swiss chard, tomatoes, and potatoes.
You don't have all that in yet, do you?
Let's see. All the cold weather food is in the warm weather. Oh, I forgot. I'm sorry. Eggplants. I forgot. The eggplants and the tomatoes are still in my greenhouse. And the squash plants I haven't put in the ground yet, but I will do that very shortly.
Wow.
So and the fun thing for me is I grow the food, we eat it, and then what I can't use, I give to food pantries in my community.
Right. That's wonderful. So since you've started Ample Harvest in 2009, you've gotten a lot of notoriety. You were a TEDx presenter, which I'm sure helped catapult you a lot, a CNN hero, and you've also gotten to meet the President and First Lady.
Absolutely. That was quite an honor.
Uh-huh, I bet it was. So what part of this journey, has been your favorite, and where do you see it going in the next 5 years?
The part that I was asked this question a while back, and it took me a while to think about it, because I didn't set up AmpleHarvest.org with any self-enriching goals per se, but what I realized that has been most rewarding to me is the awareness I'm leaving ripples in the future of the country. That something that I and the people working with AmpleHarvest.org are doing is going to impact America next year and in 50 years. And that's a very, very rewarding thing. The idea that you're going to leave the place a little bit better than you found it,
right.
I think is a wonderful thing. And that's something that's personally very rewarding to me. I get to meet wonderful people. That's another wonderful thing, too. I'm not talking about the president and first lady. That was wonderful. But I'm talking about people who are themselves involved in gardening, involved in helping other people who are having different challenges. You get to really meet an amazing variety of people, known and unknown, who are doing wonderful things in this country. And you realize that for those people who sometimes have doubts about our future, there's a wide range of people, and by the way, university students, I'm speaking to them in particular, there's a wide range of people who are doing wonderful things. I'm right now mentoring two different groups of university students who are doing programs on campuses to try to get food recovered and into the pantry system. So you meet these people you ordinarily wouldn't be meeting in the normal course of life, and you walk away feeling enriched by the fact that you've been with them. And sometimes you get quite rewarded. You've even been in their shadow.
Mm-hmm.
That has been wonderful. I mean, one of the women who was another presenter at the TEDx that I spoke at, I just learned is a finalist now for the Echoing Green competition. And, you know, that's amazing for her.
Who's that?
And the organization she has is called Fresh Paper, and her name slips me for the moment, and I apologize
uh-huh.
to her. I wasn't prepared to answer that.
Sorry.
But just the fact that you've been with people like that, I met a person who was a MacArthur Grant recipient. It's just nice to be able to be with these people and know that there are other people doing amazing things in their own ways to enrich the country and enrich the world.
Yeah. You know, I say that, too. So often I put together a weekly newsletter, and sometimes it can be, frankly, pretty depressing because there's so many areas of concern, environmental, political, you know, that have to do with food.
Yeah.
You know, of course, you touched on diabetes. We didn't even go close to obesity, but that's, you know, also in epidemic proportions because of the processed food people are eating and the lack of fresh vegetables.
It's a huge problem. One of the things that anybody can do, we do have a program, by the way, I want to briefly tell you two different programs. One's called the Virtual Food Drive. And a virtual food drive, anybody can email me directly, gary@ampleharvest.org. We'll send you information about it. But it's a way that instead of having a food drive in your organization where you donate cans and boxes, it goes to a food pantry, and once eaten, it's gone, we work with you to set up something in your community with your organization, your company, that actually makes a sustainable change in your community and helps to fund ampleharvest.org. But the other one is the centerpieces for pantries, where you can actually, instead of using floral arrangements on your, say, Thanksgiving table or holiday tables, use centerpieces made of whole fruits and vegetables and donate those to pantries. The point
mm-hmm.
is that people can make a huge change in their community. Even though people feel powerless, you'd be amazed at how powerful people really are.
Oh, yeah.
If they're just given a little bit of guidance and opportunity, and that's what AmpleHarvest.org is all about.
Yeah, we have an organization that works closely in our area called Food Not Bombs, too, that goes around and collects food that's literally being thrown out from great supermarkets like Whole Foods and Trader Joe's. A lot of the stuff's organic. And they're just going to throw it out because they got a new delivery and that's taking up space and they need to move it. And, you know, and they don't want to just give it away to people at the store or put it on sale. Anyway, they give it and we distribute it to people in need. So there's a lot of glimpses of hope, and like you said, a lot of wonderful people doing wonderful things. And so my mantra to everybody is get involved. Everyone can't do everything, but like you said, you know, you're going to stick with your mission, but everybody find a mission, find a passion, and do something to make the world a better place.
Yeah. And one question does come up on occasion is that it's, you know, what if somebody gets sick? And that's an important question about donated food, and I just want to bring this up briefly.
We're going to be out of time, but I think the Good Samaritan Act...
It's on our website. The Good Samaritan Act protects everybody.
Great. Gary, thank you so much for joining us. It's been wonderful learning about Ample Harvest. Everybody out there, you can find them at ampleharvest.org. I thank you for joining us, and I'll be with you again next week. Have a great rest of the week, and I'll see you next week.